Hello, and welcome to Back Issue Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer.
In this episode, we'll be having a spoiler-filled discussion about an older comic book storyline.
In this Back Issue Spotlight, I'm joined by James, and we're going to be discussing Thor the Devourer King. How you doing tonight, James?
I'm excellent, actually.
Good. Now, this is another Thor story, obviously, since it's Thor Devourer King, and it's fairly recent. Matter of fact, we recorded about the first issue of this at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, we did, and what's interesting is this has become kind of a hot book. It seems like Donny Cates, anytime he's on a new title, it becomes the hot book. And this is one of the ones that they said the sales were increasing issue over issue. So, and I've been enjoying it, and I wanted to compare and contrast, you know, kind of who did it better, you know, Jason Aaron or Donny Cates, and see what you think.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. Both, I think, are kind of, you know, landmark runs on the title. And there have been a couple of major runs on Thor over the years, of course. Walt Simonson, yeah. Straczynski, to name but a few of the more recent ones.
Exactly. There's been some excellent stuff. And there's been some not so excellent stuff, too.
Yeah, but I think that really varies a little from person to person. Because, I mean, some of the stuff I really enjoyed was the Thunderstrike era that a lot of people may not have liked.
That's true. Yeah. And it's all when you got into it and who you like and what you like, because I know things that I like in DC, a lot of people maybe who like don't like that stuff, I do, because that's the only thing that I've seen, and I enjoy it. So well, it's just weird, you know?
Yeah, it comes down to what is the original version or take on the characters for you, and there's that pendulum for a lot of these characters that swings back and forth.
Very much so.
You know, with Thor, is he, you know, a god in Asgard, or is he, you know, splitting part-time with, you know, Don Blake or whatever, a human on Earth and stuff?
Exactly.
Or Eric Masterson or Jane Foster, you know, whatever. And if you like one, you may not like the other and such. And very for true. Other characters, it's much more pronounced even than that sometimes.
Yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. So it really depends on when you come in, like, in the Flash, you either like, and I don't say like, but you're either a Barry person or a Wally person based on maybe when you started reading.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I'm a Barry person because I saw the TV show, and when I've been reading the Flash since Rebirth, it's been Barry. So Wally's not really near and dear to me, where I know a lot of people who started earlier than me, Wally's the Flash they like.
Yeah, it comes down to, again, what are you accustomed to, and what was sort of your default setting?
Exactly, yep.
You know, same thing with which Robin do you like?
Yeah, very true. Pick one.
So.
Not the Robin King for me.
Yeah. I think we can hopefully all agree on that. I can certainly agree on that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Thor the Devourer King. When we first talked about this beginning of the year, I had taken some notes and stuff. And after rereading the first issue, I said, you know what? I should go dig up those notes and stuff. And it was surprising how the notes I'd put together reading it, you know, for this episode really kind of mirrored what I thought back at the beginning of the year.
I should have looked at our old scores, because I remember we had reviewed it and I didn't. What kind of grade did you give it?
I gave it a B-.
Do you remember what I gave it?
Not off the top of my head.
That's okay. I didn't know. But I remember I enjoyed it much more than you did.
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, there's a couple of things that the Donny Cates did that just, there's stylistic storytelling techniques that just don't work great for me.
Opening, no, I can understand that.
Yeah, opening with a couple of pages of captions and such, I'm not keen on that.
Yeah.
He did a good job with it, but between that, I'd been out of Thor for a while, so I didn't know the status quo going in. You know, it's, I'd been off the title for about a year and a half at that point. And yeah. While I liked the story then, I enjoyed it now, reading it through to its sixth issue and such, not enough to get me back on the title.
Okay. And that makes sense. You know what I was thinking when I reread this? We kind of talk about this because I experienced this a little bit at DC, and I'm starting to see this happening at Marvel. there's writers who they respect the continuity and they build a lore around that and they tell a tale, you know, they weave a tapestry. Kind of like I think Jason Aaron did that with his Thor. And then you go over here and you have more like the who's the guy who's doing Dark Knight's Metal? Snyder. Kind of like the shock and awe effect. Mm-hmm. So he goes in there and I'm going to shake it up. Boom. You know, here we go. It's something that you don't see coming. And so I was like, wow, now that I've been reading stuff more and seeing and really feeling what I like and recognizing these things with the reviews, I kind of, you know, take Kate's and I'm like, he's the Marvel Snyder. Whereas Aaron's maybe equivalent to, I don't know, who would you say more grounded at DC in continuity? I mean, not necessarily grounded, but they write a good tale, but they respect the continuity.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean and stuff. What was interesting for me, having previously only read the first issue of it, but now having read all six of this arc, was how much it felt, while it was clearly starring Thor, it felt more like a Silver Surfer story.
It did kind of feel like a Silver Surfer story. It really did.
It's like he had this great pitch for Silver Surfer, and they're like, hey, you want to do Thor instead? I'm sure, I know this didn't happen, but I can imagine him thinking about it, thinking, you know, I think I could make that work. We'll just put Thor in place of the Silver Surfer and go there.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this Silver Surfer idea. Let's do this. Because, yeah, he literally becomes the Herald of Galactus.
Mm-hmm.
With a caveat there, and that so and he's way stronger than any Herald that's ever been.
Oh, yeah. He's a Herald unlike any other Galactus has had.
And I would say he's not subservient to Galactus at all.
Oh, no. And that was one of the things I really enjoyed about it.
Me too, because that was the different take. Because, you know, you figure, okay, here's the king of Asgard, because Thor is now the king. You know, he's the All-Father, I guess. And you're thinking, you know, how is Galactus going to be taking control of this king? But he does not. Thor is able to stand up to him and literally saying, no, I'm keeping this power. You know, this cosmic power that you're giving me, you're not taking it back.
Yeah, yeah.
That was really cool.
A much more dynamic and aggressive relationship between Galactus and Thor than any previous Herald he's had.
Yeah, it's almost kind of like you always hear that saying, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's the situation we're seeing here, because they are getting together to face off against the, I can't remember the name, the Night... What is that big thing that they're fighting? The Night Eternal or?
No, it was
Black Winter.
Yeah.
The Black Winter. I'm like, no, not a Night Eternal. What is it? Something dark. Yeah, the Black Winter, which they have different names for it. It's just kind of funny because we're getting into that Endless Winter over at DC. So that's why I'm getting confused.
Well, there comes a point where there's only so many variations on these names before they all blur together.
Yeah, very much so. But the Black Winter, I thought that was kind of cool because they're coming together to basically face him and they need to go on a quest.
Yeah, it took a good couple of issues in before we really understood kind of what the Black Winter was.
Very much so, yep.
And it was one of those things where it did feel a little bit like cliffhanger after cliffhanger after cliffhanger for this story. But each issue moved things forward and was interesting enough that I wasn't really bothered by that.
Yeah, I wasn't bothered by that at all, the cliffhangers. They were, because it was moving. It was moving pretty, I wouldn't say rapidly, but at a good pace.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and again, it ended the first issue on an interesting note of, okay, he's now a Herald of Galactus. I mean, not that Galactus asked.
True. Herald of Thunder.
Yeah, what I was a little frustrated by was, okay, Galactus, you know, crashes Asgard, and I mean that quite literally, although there didn't seem to be much fallout from that. Thor then summons the other heralds, former heralds of Galactus. Okay, that makes sense. He needs information. They can provide it.
Yeah.
But it was really a shame they couldn't be bothered to actually name those characters in the course of this issue. It's just either you know who they are or you don't.
That's the inaccessibility in modern comics that happens so often. And that is a little bit frustrating. So because it's true. They should have said, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so, this is so-and-so. Because if you haven't been reading Fantastic Four specifically, you're not going to know who these characters are.
Well, and I recognized, you know, most of them or whatever, but, you know, can I tell you the names off the top of my head? Because it's been a decade or two since I've read about a few of them. And, like, I'm not current, I mean, on some stuff, I haven't read Silver Surfer Black, so I'm not sure why the Silver Surfer is black.
Exactly.
Right. Does that impact his powers, his ability? Do they call him the Black Surfer now? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. I what's weird is, with Silver Surfer Black, that was another one that, it was really heralded, but it didn't sit well with me. And I kind of checked out the art, which just took me out of the story and I couldn't pay attention. But some people loved it. I didn't really care for it that much, just personally.
Yeah. Again,
I couldn't tell you why he's black.
Well, and I'm assuming it doesn't matter. And for two reasons. One, it wasn't brought up in the story as if it mattered. And two, we really don't see much of these heralds after this issue.
No, you see them in that one thing, and then it's kind of like Thor becomes the focus, of course. It's a Thor book. But yeah, they're gone. You know, they kind of talk, and then you don't see them again, ever.
Well, at the end of the issue, I mean, Thor has, you know, gathered the other heralds, or the heralds at that point. A lot of Asgardian warriors, and are like, okay, we're all going to go deal with this. He becomes a herald, and then starting next issue, it's a solo story.
Yeah, we're out of here, and it's just him.
And I'm like, the others don't even get dismissed. They just get ignored.
I guess they're just left in Asgard. I don't know what's going on with them. So, but yeah, it's true. We don't see them again. They disappear into the ether.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, was an aspect of the second issue, which a little annoying. I did find the way the issue started somewhat hilarious.
Where with the people disintegrating?
Well, that is kind of sort of a riff on Crisis on Infinite Earths with the antimatter wave, except in this case it's more of, you know, a snap kind of a illusion. But we're in the DC universe at this point.
Okay.
A sun god, a god of emerald light, a god of dark, perhaps, a god of the ocean, of speed, of strength.
That's true. Oh my gosh.
This universe,
you know, I didn't even pick on that.
Like so many before it, is protected by leagues of gods.
Oh my gosh, now that you're saying that, I'm like just reading it, and I'm like, that even looks like the Daily Planet now that I look at it. I'm like, holy mackerel. Oh, yeah, we are in DC Universe. Thank you. And they are disintegrating.
And what I also found interesting is that page where you've got the hand grasping the solar system or the galaxy or whatever, that in and of itself is a key iconic kind of DC image of kind of the birth of creation.
So this was kind of plagiarized, this entire opening from DC.
Plagiarized, lifted, inspired by, choose your term.
Inspired by, we'll go by that. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt.
It didn't, I mean, it was something that I could grab the clear, you know, what it was derivative of, but not in a way that it felt cheap or come on, get your own ideas.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. I literally read through that, and I was just like, I was sitting there thinking, oh, that looks like the Daily Planet, but I'm reading it, and I was just not even, I'm like, yeah, that's Superman now that I look at it. I'm like, holy mackerel, what am I thinking? Didn't even pick up on that. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Thank you for cluing me in.
Well, it even goes a little further, because when that hand is grasping those stars and stuff, you know, and they will see their stone-faced avatar of their one true end, for them, their Omega, the one who is. It kind of feels like a Dark Side reference.
Ah, very much. That's kind of cool. I like that. So Donny Cates is a fan. He's pulling from DC.
Can't blame him for that.
Yeah, very cool. I like that.
Now, there was another thing in here, trying to find where it was, that I liked, where he's on this planet. The natives are getting restless. And there was a caption, and this is one of the few times I think it was a really good use of a caption.
Okay.
Thor speaks as he always has, with the all tongue, allowing all who hear and all to hear and understand the words he speaks.
Yes.
I'm like, well, that's a fitting power for a god.
Very nice. Yeah.
He's got a universal translator. Doesn't even need a TARDIS or anything.
Yeah, just talk to anyone. That was really that was kind of funny. I like that. But it's true. It would be needed, you know, if you're a deity. So that was kind of cool. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be interesting if that was almost a deity equivalent of the Turing test.
Very true. That is super cool. I did like that. And then he proceeds to, as he goes to these planets, to save the native inhabitants of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So these are almost like ape-like creatures. You know, they look very primitive. And apparently very strong, because they hit him with that rock in the head and knocked him on all you know, his hands and knees.
Well, I think there was another story to be had here, parallel to this one, on Asgard, with all these refugees landing on their doorstep.
Yeah, that's got to be quite... these primitive creatures coming over, and I'm assuming they're primitive. They may not be, but they just appear that way, you know, holding the sticks and stone arrows. But, yeah, to see how they interact with these Asgardian deities they're just running into, that would be hilarious.
I mean, if you think about it, this is a really odd time in Asgard, because you've literally had Galactus in the first issue crash, you know, do a belly flop almost, into a plaza filled with Asgardians.
Boom.
Presumably crushing and killing quite a few of them.
Kind of taking their wisping away with their king.
You know, and now you've got, you know, group after group of refugees, and I don't mean small groups, I mean like planetary-sized groups.
Planet falls of refugees, and poor Volstagg's trying to check them in with a pen and a quill and a piece of paper.
Yeah, yeah.
That's hilarious.
You know, recolor that, and you got Santa Claus with his naughty and nice list or something. Jeez.
Very true. That would be a good story, though. A funny one.
Yeah. So, it was a fun issue. I liked seeing Beta Ray Bill. He was well used.
Yeah, that's what I liked. I liked seeing Beta Ray Bill show up at the end with the, it's almost like a space, you know, battleship, I guess you would call it. You know, boom, blasting away at Thor and Galactus there. But that was kind of cool.
His outfit looked both Thor-like and almost Iron Man-like with that weird circular thing on his chest.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, very. It's almost like a blend between the two.
Yeah.
And he shows up with his own hammer, and he's ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, why are you helping him? Why are you guys destroying planets? And he, at this point, thinks Thor is a slave to Galactus.
Yeah, yeah. And again, this was where it was really hitting home for me, that this was feeling very much like a Silver Surfer story versus a Thor story.
Yeah, I could see that, because I know exactly what you mean there. Yep.
Now, the other thing that I noticed when we got to that third issue, and it was probably already by this point, is in that third issue, we've got a, you know, opening scene there, and that's when I first noticed Thor has both his arms.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. On the second page there. Yeah.
And
is that from the past? I'm assuming he has the old helmet. Maybe. I don't know.
I was unclear, because I had thought at the beginning of this
he had lost his arm at the end of and an eyeball in Jason Aaron's run.
Well, he seems to have two eyes and two arms here.
Yeah, so if this is not from the past, this is definitely a mistake here.
Well, I mean, this is when he's present day with Beta Ray Bill, so...
Very true, yeah. Yeah.
Did he get healed when he became a Herald of Galactus?
That's true. The cosmic power must have, because, yeah, he has both eyes, he has two arms. That's true, yeah. That's bizarre. Huh.
So, if he'd gotten healed, it's like...
The power of cosmic has healed all.
It makes sense, but it took me a few issues to realize that's what happened, if that is what happened.
And now that you say it, I what's weird is I didn't even notice that before. You know, I just kind of went with the story. But I knew at the beginning when I was first reading it, when I was showing, you know, Thor and his state, I knew that he had gone through all the tribulation and lost the arm, lost the eye. He's the king of Asgard, and Loki's the king of... What the frost giant Jotunheim or whatever the heck it's called. So, but yeah, now we're seeing him with both arms. So the power cosmic must have healed him. They just didn't come out and say it.
Yeah. I really enjoyed the showdown between Thor and Beta Ray Bill.
That was really cool. Yeah.
You know, when Beta Ray Bill is like, why didn't you have somebody else do this? Why didn't you come to me? It's like, you're king now. And he's like, yeah, I'm king now. It falls on me to do this.
Yeah. I'm not coming to you. Yeah, I'm the king. And that's a pretty cool fight. And I was so surprised to see, not surprised, but Beta Ray Bill taking the lumps he did.
Well, taking the lumps is one thing, but then taking the hammer?
That was kind of, yeah, wow. I was surprised with that, weren't you?
Yeah, and they've been building up that the hammer is getting a little heavy for Thor these days.
Yep.
So So I was wondering, was this going to turn out he's no longer worthy? Is the hammer picking sides? But then Thor's reaction to that is, fine, you're going to keep the hammer? I'll take Stormbreaker, your hammer axe or whatever it is.
Boom, he takes it.
I mean, okay, that's cool.
That was really cool. And how that played out, I was just like, wow, the hammer is gone.
Well, yeah, it was, I like, well, let me be careful how I phrase this. I thought what happened with Stormbreaker, not so cool, but I thought the moment was cool.
That, I felt the same way. The moment is cool, but there's such lore behind it that you didn't want to see that happen.
Well, and that, like, two-page splash, that's a defining moment between those two.
It really is, because they've been allies and they've been friends, and here's, you know, they're going at it, and that has repercussions that'll last from here forward.
Until Thor does something to make it right.
He has to. Yeah, to make this story complete, I think Donny Cates has to make that right with Thor and with Beta Ray Bill.
If he doesn't, somebody else will.
They have to, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd rather it be Cates who does it.
Me too. I don't want to see, like, at the beginning of, you know, Jason Aaron's Thor where he's running around with just an axe. You know, I don't want to see an axe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this was one where it had a nice kind of last page reveal. A bit of a cliffhanger, but it was a good one, so, you know, I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and I like the characters he's bringing in, so we get to see Beta Ray, and then we get to see Sif. So, you know, and these are some of the better-known Thor characters, because there's a lot of obscure ones if you had that, you know, splash page at the end. Mm-hmm. If I hadn't been reading Thor for a while, I might not know who it is. But it's good that people should know who these two characters are if they have any background in Thor.
Well, if you've been reading this story, Sif was set up in the first issue.
Yeah, very true.
But that reveal with Beta Ray Bill in that second issue... That, okay, you may not know. But you could recognize it's a Thor-like character.
Yeah, you'd be like, who's this Thor with a horse face?
Mm-hmm. And a simple conversation or Google search, and you can easily find out.
Yeah, I agree.
It would be a character that would be fun to see in the movies.
I think so, too. I would like to see him, like, in the next Thor. You know, like, what's weird is I could see a Jason Aaron, you know, his run of Thor being made into a movie, you know, that whole epic odyssey that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, this, you could see some movie stuff built around this, you know, the shock and awe type stuff. You know, depending on which way Marvel wants to go with the movie franchise, I could see both of them playing out.
Yeah, I think the challenge with this arc in particular being done in the movie is... needing to set up Galactus and a few things like that.
Through Fantastic Four and everything, yeah. Otherwise, it wouldn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. And there comes a point where they've already diverged the movie continuity from the comics continuity in a couple of places, that when you adapt certain stories, you've got to kind of, you know, account for that.
Exactly. Yep.
So, fourth issue. Again, some fun stuff.
A lot of fun stuff. They keep on, you know, focusing on the tree, and I'm not going to say that, you know, there's, I call it the world tree because I don't like to say the names because I butcher them, I'm sure.
Yeah, they're unpronounceable. You need the all tongue to name them.
Exactly. So I'll just say the world tree. But it's being dropped in here and hinted at that the world tree is kind of dying, and that's an underlying thing. It doesn't get addressed here in this first arc, so I know it's playing out further down the road, but that's what we open up with. But then it goes right back into... here's Lady Sif.
Well, and it's interesting because we've had a few other times that the world tree dying has been brought up, but we're four issues in and Thor is still none the wiser.
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't seems to not know anything about it. And you figured the king would know.
One would. Well, Volstagg tried to tell him.
Yeah, and he just kind of poo-pooed it and I'm out of here.
So, the showdown between Thor and Sif, I thought was hilarious.
Me too, with the bridge.
With the bridge.
That was so cool. I like that. It's something that I didn't expect and you didn't see coming.
Well, and her as the guardian of the bridge, in place of, who was it before?
Oh, I can't remember his name.
I want to say Balder, but I think that's wrong. I get them all mixed up, but
I honestly can't remember. As Heimdall.
Heimdall. It's the Idris Elba character from the movies.
Heimdall.
Of course.
That,
yeah,
Heimdall. That's the guy. I butcher their names all the time. So yeah, Heimdall.
What I loved was, you know, not only did Sif make good use of the bridge, but then, you know, what happens with the hammer? That played out here, and I thought was fun.
Yeah, it was fun, and it's kind of, it's very, very, very unexpected how that happens.
Whoever wields the hammer sort of a thing, there's a story to be told here.
Yes, and actually, just a little hint, I know you're not picking up, but issues 7 and 8 kind of pick up a little bit on this.
Interesting. Story.
So, it starts to pick up, and there's only 8 issues out, so I don't know what's beyond.
Because that was a moment, it's like, I hadn't seen that coming?
Yeah, I did not expect it when I saw that. I was like, what in the heck?
Yeah, it feels like it flies in the face of history, but they sold the moment. It's like, okay, I can buy this.
Yeah, they really sold it, and you're like, now you feel like compelled to, I need to know what's going on. What is happening here?
This is where Donny Cates is doing a good job, kind of dropping some interesting story tidbits, planting some seeds that are intriguing, and it's like, okay, I am curious how some of this plays out.
Me too. Yep.
So I thought that was good. Because a lot of times, a writer can put something like that in there, and it can just either seem forced or fall flat or, come on, get around to it sort of a thing. Whereas that didn't happen for me here.
That's good. That's awesome. And it didn't happen for me either. I enjoyed that. I thought that scene was really cool. And I was happy to know, going back and reading this, you know, it jogged my memory again. I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember this. You know, that he's going and dealing with it. He didn't just, you know, show this thing and not circle back around. So, kind of cool.
I love the bit when Galactus is getting a little cranky because he's hungry. And Thor just kind of sticks his arm out, you know, and nobody's sitting there wondering what's going on, but, you know, panel later, thump, the hammer's back.
Yeah, boom. Yep, that was really cool.
That just reeks of, I can see a scene in a movie where it's like, you might want to stand a few feet off to the left.
Yeah, he's just standing there for a while.
He's just got his arm out. What's the big deal? I'm out of his way. Trust me.
And we saw in a previous issue, this hammer can go through pretty much anything.
Oh, yeah. And it was a good opening to show that.
Yeah, that was really cool.
But man, when Thor pushes back against Galactus, he's not messing around.
He's not. And that's when you really realize who holds the power here, I think.
Well, you know, to me, there's not a clear upper hand to be had.
No, they seem equals almost at this point. He's like, yeah, I'm the messenger, or what is it called?
The herald.
The herald. God, I dropped the word. But here I am, I'm the herald, but I'm not your servant.
Yeah.
I'm not doing your bidding. So, yeah, they appear almost as equals at this point.
Well, I mean, it shows that Thor is just a fundamentally different kind of a herald for Galactus that Galactus isn't used to. I mean, Thor is pushing back pretty seriously at times. And it was a very fun dynamic.
Very much so. I thought it was really fun, and you see the relationship change a little bit over time, and you realize how he's holding back.
Mm-hmm.
And doing what he needs to do to get to the bottom of this the Black Winter.
Yeah. But this was when I was really starting to wonder, where are these other heralds?
Yeah, they're completely gone, because this is strictly a Thor and Galactus story at this point, you know, along with some side characters that appear.
Yeah, I mean, we've had a few issues and we haven't even mentioned the other heralds.
Yeah, correct.
But, you know, we got Thor, so we're good.
Yeah, and we get to see some of the other characters going across the Rainbow Bridge to Asgard. Some fluffy bears and some brains that look like octopus and some things that look like they're from the Cancerverse.
Or the grasshopper sort of things?
Yeah, yeah. It looked like Annihilus babies or something. Who knows what they are?
I'll be honest. I was surprised that we went through 3 of the planets in a 2-page splash.
Me too. That's when I was like, they're really picking up speed, because you almost felt like he could have had a story for each one of these and how it played out, and more, you know, here's what happened on this world. Here's what, you know, here's how we, different things that happened there. But it was really quick. I was like, wow, we sped up here. Fast forward.
Yeah, I mean, another way to have paced this is, okay, we've got 5 worlds. We've spent the first issue setting it up. So, second issue is the first world. Third issue is the second world, etc.
Yeah, and he did not do that.
No.
Yeah, because by the this is issue 4, we see the three planets. Boom, boom, boom. We already dealt with the first one, and now we're on to planet 5.
Yeah, yeah.
With a lot of people there.
Well, and Thor is again trying to save everybody, and it's not always possible.
Correct. And Galactus starts getting hungry quicker on this planet.
Well, in the reveal here of the Black Winter,
yeah.
Really, this is where we're starting to get a true sense of the threat.
Yeah, you see the magnitude of the thing coming. This is appears larger than a planet coming towards them.
Well, it appears larger than Galactus size in comparison to Galactus.
Yeah, it's huge, and it's this almost like a cloud-like creature coming towards them at this point. But it does eventually, what I like is they did manifest it into like a human body.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting, particularly the form it chose.
Me too. Yeah, I agree.
So with the 5th issue, we're starting to get a little bit of, at least, you know, in some short panels, the refugee problem that Asgard is having.
Yeah, and I do want to read that story, but that story probably will never be written.
Yeah, probably not. This is one that if they had decided to do this almost like an event, they could have done it as backup features or one-shots or something.
Yeah, and you see Sif, and you also see Beta there, Beta Ray Bill, and you see him in a sling. You know, he got beat up pretty bad.
Yeah, what also surprised me is we see Lockjaw.
Yeah, Lockjaw's there. They didn't deal a lot with Lockjaw, but I'm trying to remember. I don't remember why he's there in Asgard.
He can teleport, so he may have just been there for the afternoon.
Yeah, but they don't really deal with him that much. He's just there.
I'm not even sure where the Inhumans are these days. I've kind of lost track.
Yeah, the Inhumans are completely off the planet. I guess we're getting Eternals soon, but the Inhumans are gone.
Well, given how much they pushed those for a while, it was unavoidable that they'd go through a lull in popularity.
Yeah, it was during that time frame when Fox still owned Fantastic Four and the X franchise, and they were trying to make the Inhumans like the X franchise for the movies, and it ended up being a TV series, and it was just kind of okay.
It was not a bad TV series.
Yeah, it was good. It just one season, and it disappeared.
Yeah,
it was disappointing. My wife actually liked it a lot.
10 episodes and it was gone.
Yeah. It kind of disappointing because it looks like they put a lot of money into it.
They did, and they had a good cast.
Yeah, I liked it.
So, this kind of battle between Thor, Galactus, and the Black Winter almost kind of sort of felt like a three-way fight at times. Because Thor and Galactus are sort of on the same side, but sort of not.
Yeah, it was kind of weird because I expected them to team up. You know, when I was first reading this through, this is my second read through. So you're expecting them to, we need both of our powers together to face this thing. And then you basically realize that the Black Winter is after Galactus. He's not there for their universe.
Mm-hmm.
He's not there to destroy them. And so that's when it starts to change. The dynamic all starts switching.
Well, I think also he's playing a little bit of a head game with Thor when he refers to, you know, Thor, the All Butcher and the End God.
Yeah. And then you saw that first form when he kind of like got into his mind.
Uh-huh.
Gore, the God Butcher, is there. You're like, what the heck?
I mean, these I think, clues of things to come, and also just trying to get, you know, inside Thor's head.
He really is, because you see Loki, you see Gore, the God Butcher. Is that the Mangog, I think it is? Is that the creature?
The splash page of
yeah.
All the... Yeah, that's...
Mangog, I can't remember.
Mephisto, Juggernaut, Doctor Doom.
Apocalypse is there.
Yeah, yeah. The Enchantress, the Elf King or whatever.
Annihilus. Yep.
I mean, so it's, you know...
It's a lot. You basically have a rogues gallery there. And it says, this is how you die. But it's not really. He's just messing with them and getting memories, almost visions from his mind.
Yeah.
Learning who he is.
Still, cool splash page.
I did like that. That was kind of cool. I liked it.
Yeah, you know, I felt the reveal of who or what the Black Winter was interesting. A little confusing because, again, he's kind of playing all the angles here at times. But where it kind of ended in terms of why he's there and what his goal is with Galactus, I thought was fascinating and made sense.
Yeah, when they had him appear as basically a human form, it reminded me, he almost took the form of Thor. I mean, he looks like a Thor, but with very, very long hair, flowing black hair.
Was kind of essentially a dark Thor.
Yeah, dark Thor. So like the opposite of Thor, because Thor has the flowing white hair in this thing. So yeah, his complete opposite. But it was kind of cool because he's like, I'm here for him. And you find out that Galactus was a herald.
Mm-hmm.
Which you're like, this totally flips everything on its head because, you know, we've always seen Galactus as this all-powerful being who has these servants that work for him. To see him as a servant, you're like, man, how powerful is this Black Winter?
Well, but it makes sense that he's basically, Galactus is getting heralds because, well, that's what's done. You know,
that's what he grew up, what he learned.
Exactly. He's going based on experience. So exactly. It's not something I saw, but when it happened, it's like, yeah, that fits. That makes sense.
It makes sense because you tend to gravitate towards how you're raised and brought up. So if he's brought up and he's like, I've been a servant to this thing and, you know, did their biddings, and now he's this powerful being and he wants someone to do his bidding and help him. So you can definitely see that.
I mean, to me, this is a good use of continuity in the history of the characters.
I agree.
You know, if we didn't have this long history of heralds for Galactus being a herald, yeah, whatever.
But yeah, this makes complete sense and why he always wants a herald.
Yeah.
It explains a lot for us.
Again, feels very much like a Silver Surfer story, but it's working as a Thor story.
Speaking of him, you get an appearance of the Silver Surfer on the first page of the sixth issue.
Again, is he still going by the name Silver Surfer because he's so dark? I mean, I
don't know. Black Surfer, Silver... I call him Silver Surfer, but I don't know if that's what he's going to be called. Obsidian Surfer? I don't know.
Obsidian Surfer. I like that one.
Yeah, let's go with that.
We'll go with that. Yeah, it was interesting. I love the little visual of the surfboard turning into a staircase for him to step down.
That was super cool. I like that. That was clever.
I don't know if that was in the script, if that was something the artist just did. Either way, it worked and it was nice.
Yeah, I like that. And something that we haven't seen done with the surfboard before.
Yeah.
Very cool.
This is essentially a flash forward to the end of the story.
Correct.
And we get a little bit of another reference of the hammers getting heavier for Thor.
The hammer's getting heavier, and he's basically drinking away his problems. You know, when he deals with heavy issues, he turns to mead.
Well, drinking away also, the pain. When we get back to the scene at the end, we know what he's seen.
Exactly, and he's been traumatized by that effect.
Yeah. You know, then we cut back to the quote-unquote now, and I'm really not a fan of the time jumping, but, you know, okay, fine, that's what they're doing.
But you have a really juiced up with these five planets, Galactus. It's like, you lie, trying to take out the Black Winter.
Well, and Thor's kind of pumped up, too.
Yeah, they're both pumped up.
I mean, you take the god power, you give it some power cosmic and whatnot, and yeah.
Yeah, but this is where it kind of flips a little bit.
Yeah, there's definitely some fireworks going on, and the whole relationship going on here between Thor and Galactus, this is where, while it feels like a Silver Surfer story, you could not have told this with Silver Surfer.
Correct. Yeah, you couldn't tell the story with Silver Surfer. He's not powerful enough to do this, and I don't think he would do this.
Even if he were powerful enough, he's not aggressive enough.
Exactly. This is not who he is.
Yeah.
But this is definitely who Thor is.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can see Thor doing this. Literally, I'm looking at him doing it. But he takes it to Galactus.
Some fun stuff, great visuals, particularly the point at which Thor is just practically glowing white.
Yeah, and then you realize he's supercharged.
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
That splash page, it was fun. That was what shocked me so much, that double two-page splash.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, whoa, did this just happen? I mean, just kind of surprising.
Yeah, but this is one of the things where the did this just happen, yeah, but it's not like it's for the first time.
It's true. It happened before. I've seen it.
And it will happen again.
It will happen again. It's just a way to set the table of how powerful this creature is, or this person is.
And it's still a fun splash page.
It is fun. I liked it. It was kind of nice seeing him kind of emaciated like that.
Mm-hmm. When we finally get the reveal of Asgard and kind of the entryway to it now that had been alluded to in that opening scene, I'm like, okay, interesting. Certainly makes a statement.
That was really cool. I thought that. I was like, wow, not what I expected, but very cool.
Yeah. Don't know that it's a wise idea, but okay. Okay. And then when we get the two-page splash of what Thor saw.
Yeah, he asks him, what do you see? And you see the eyes of Thor open up. And that's when I'm like, is this really where we're going? This could be insane.
There's a couple of things going on in there. The background is kind of one thing, and the foreground is another thing, or two, or three.
Yeah.
If they do that foreground stuff as an event, I'd be in at least for the main event part.
I'm in for that completely. And the background kind of reminds me of something that's going on right now in a mini series right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that I'm just like, is that going to be combined somehow? Why are they both on the same page? I don't know. But the foreground is definitely what I'm down for the event. The background, I'm like, I think they're going to take that thing that they've done a few times and maybe bring it back, you know, in a bigger way. Who knows?
Yeah. I think so.
Something you wouldn't like.
No, but I would be willing to put up with that for the intriguing visual in front of it.
Me too, yeah. So I think that's kind of cool. I saw that and I was just like, whoa, that's something that could be a cool storyline.
Mm-hmm.
A very cool event. So it got me kind of pumped up for it. And when that happens, I know eventually they'll go here. I hope they're not going to just throw this out there and nothing happen. I'm really excited to read this story.
It's too good of an idea not to go with.
Exactly. So, then you see that last page, and he literally says darkness and nothing more, and you're just like, wow, with the mead.
Yeah, yeah. It was a good, solid kind of ending that concluded this, yet gave a very clear tease for what could come next.
Very much so. So, you know, like, I really enjoy Kate's run. And now I would say the next two issues are a little bit more grounded than this one. I mean, they're not different. It deals more with the hammer earlier that we saw.
Mm-hmm.
The scene, and you thought that was kind of cool. So it deals with that. But I know it's going to circle around to the heavier stuff eventually. But I thought this was a really fun issue. Well, at the same time, you know, this is kind of like the shock and awe treatment, whereas Jason Aaron seems like he was writing the Odyssey, you know, the epic tale that's going to span, you know, 150 issues or however many issues he did.
Well, I think Cates has a game plan that'll go for a while.
He does. He really does.
Probably not as epic a one as Jason Aaron had, because he probably doesn't know if he'll have that much runway.
Yeah, like 7 years or however many years
yeah.
he spent on it. But I could see Cates spending 3 or 4 years on this.
Easily, at least easily.
Because there's a lot of material here.
Well, and what I liked about this storyline is it jumped around in time a little bit, but it had a very clear through line for the whole thing versus the kind of three different competing Thors we had with Jason Aaron's stuff.
Yeah, if you don't like the time jumps, Jason Aaron's run is going to bug you, especially at the beginning, because there's so much of that jumping going on. And here there's a tiny bit, but not very much. And I remember the feeling I had when I read Aaron from beginning to end. I was just like, man, that was so good. And I came out of it, I was like, I was kind of depressed because like, it's over. You know, when you read something really good, you don't want it to finish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read this and I'm like, man, I feel like Thor's in good hands. I'm happy. I'm okay.
Yeah. To have, you know, another writer come on after an epic run like that and kind of pick it up and do as well as Donny Cates is doing, it doesn't happen often.
It's rare. I don't think I've ever seen it. I mean, I'm sure it's happened before, but nothing comes to mind where I'm like, man, it just went from an A book to another A book.
Brubaker's run right after Bendis on Daredevil, maybe?
There you go. That's another one. Yep.
I think there have been a couple, and that was one where there was just a crazy smooth handoff between the two.
Yeah, like, it's very rare that you see it almost where you get this, like, man, that was an amazing run right into the next. This feels like it's going to be an amazing run.
Well, I think it's daunting to come in on a title right after somebody has done a really lengthy run or well-respected run or something like that. Because, and Peter David's talked about this a few times when he's picked up a book after somebody who had such a run. If you lean into what they're doing, it's like, oh, you've got no ideas, and you get kind of raked over the coals for that.
Yeah.
If you lean away from it, it's like, but that's what I liked, and you get raked over the coals for it. So it's almost a no-win situation.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know how Cates did it, because he gave a nod by basically the status quo at the beginning with the arm and the eye and everything, but yet he was able to change it up in a way that made sense and made it kind of like cool and fresh and different.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what made it non-offensive to me, is like, this is so different, but in its own right, it's so cool that right now, you know, I mean, we're only 8 issues in, but I'm like, I'm so happy again. I'm enjoying Thor.
No, I can definitely see why. It's a well-told story and such, and it's fun. It's, again, very not earthbound and stuff like that. It's more accessible to me than Aaron's run was.
Okay.
But it's still not something that I feel, man, I've got to be picking this up every month.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. And I mean, and you're cutting back. And this is, I would say Thor and Wonder Woman are very similar in that if you don't want to be all in, or you're not, it's not really your thing, you're dealing with gods and mythical stuff a lot of the times. This one's more space-based at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're... sometimes that can rub me the wrong way, and if I'm not in the mood for it, I don't want to read it. I mean, a good example of that is Bendis just wrote an issue of Young Justice that I read, where it was dealing with Wonder Girl.
Yeah, yeah.
And when Zeus gets in there with the thou art and the that, and I'm like, okay, it just kind of like not fun at that point. But if it's done in the right way, it can be really cool. But I know when you're like making that the focal point, if you're not into the mythology thing, it's probably something you can set aside.
Well, and this was a very interesting mix of Marvel's gods, in this case the Asgardians in specific, but also the Marvel cosmic.
Yeah,
you know,
much so.
Galactus in specific. So it was hitting both aspects on that, I thought, fairly well. So it's, if I were looking for a title to add, yeah, I probably would have added this.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's really cool. Well, I know you'll be back around for the event that's eventually going to come with that splash page.
Yeah. Let me know, because what was kind of front and center there, it's like, okay, that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, something we haven't seen, and I think that could be really awesome.
Definitely really could be amazing. A game changer.
Yeah, a big time game changer. So that gets me excited for the future, and I was like, yeah, I have to stick with this book. But that's just me, you know, I have a little bit more time. But I'm also, like you said, I'm trimming a little bit, but me, I'm doing a little more trimming on indies right now.
Well,
I had a lot of stuff that was kind of on shaky ground in the indie world with me.
I can understand that totally. For me, the risk that they run on this title is particularly going so big with his first story arc with Donny Cates here. Some writers feel the need to kind of constantly outdo themselves.
Yeah, the shock and awe.
This would be a hard one to kind of up the ante on.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because I think, and we talked about this, you know, I hate picking on the guy, because I read some stuff by Snyder, and I'm just like, man, this is cool. This is amazing. When he first started writing Justice League, I was like, man, this is cool. It feels like an event. Every issue feels like an event. But then after a while, every issue felt like an event, and that it kind of fatigued a little bit. And there's only so much you can up the ante. And then when you get to the big payoff, I think it takes a little bit away from it, because if you've kept me at a 9.5 moving to a 10, it doesn't feel like the ante's been raised at all. So you got to have some ebbs and flows, pull it back a little bit, and then slowly build up a slow simmer up to that explosion. Boom. Here it is.
Well, yeah, because I think it was one of the Dark Knight's Death Metal issues. Somebody had asked a question, somebody's like, oh, it's a long story. And the footnote was, yeah, Justice League's number 1 through 27 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if this event has been being built up for years.
Literally years.
it's a little too slow of a burn sometimes. And it wasn't a slow burn on that title.
Yeah, it wasn't. It's just so much. Yeah, actually, you know, there's some events I really like, some I don't like. Death Metal is just completely insane to me right now. It's just complete lunacy, right? I read it, I'm like, what is going on? But then I don't feel bad because I ask other people and they're like, I don't know what's going on. I'm like, oh, okay, so we're all lost in this.
Well, but that's one of the things I really enjoyed about this story is, you know, you've got the King of Asgard getting amped up with cosmic powers. You're really kind of taking the action off the scale. Yet you can tell what's going on. You can follow the story. And even though the power levels are outrageous, it doesn't feel like it's nothing but explosions.
Exactly. Yeah. It's tough to do. So, and I thought this was excellent. I think, you know, Cates, he got a lot of fanfare for the Venom run that he did. And some different things that he's done. But I think, honestly, Thor is probably one of my favorite things that he's done so far.
It's going to be interesting to see the next title or two he takes over after this.
Yeah.
Because, okay, he did good with Venom. People could chalk that up as a one-off or whatever. He's doing great on Thor, so it's hard to discount that. If he can do this another couple of times, I mean, he's now in that A-list category, no questions asked.
Yeah, he's the writer, you know, the guy. And if he gets to that level, you know, people are just naturally going to be drawn to him. And I think that's already starting to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But like you said, by that third title, you'll really know.
Well, and if he can do it on enough different titles with enough different stories, and it's not just, oh, he had one great idea or something like that. And I'm not trying to downplay anything he's doing or anything of the sort, but when you're on, you know, Thanos or Venom or titles that at the time were kind of, you know, lower sales tier or whatever, and are getting noticed because they're getting noticed.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, when you've got a title like Thor's been at the top of the charts before. So there's some definite historic competition to, is this a really great run or not?
And if he's able to do that, it speaks volumes, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. So I thought, do you have a preference? If you had to choose one, would you be a Cates reader right now?
Yeah.
Okay, I kind of got that from you. After reviewing the Aaron stuff last week, I feel it from you that you enjoyed this a little bit more.
I think Aaron had a more epic scale to his story.
Yeah.
And a longer, more thought out game plan. But I enjoyed this story more. I found it more accessible, even though there's a couple of things that could have beefed up the accessibility.
Mm-hmm.
And I was more intrigued with what was going on here. Cause even though there's more threats to come, it really felt like Gore was just never going away and Thor had to deal with him forever.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that was a, in my mind, a flaw of the storytelling structure.
Yeah. A pro and a con.
Yeah.
It was a cool character, but he was there from beginning to end, pretty much.
Well, for Thor's beginning to end, literally thousands of years.
Yep.
You know, Thor just couldn't get the job done.
Yep. Exactly.
So I thought that was a unfortunate aspect of the story, but I think both are good runs. This would be the one I'd be more likely to pick up.
Well, I'm glad we reviewed it then, because
yeah, same here.
I feel like I kind of introduced you to it, even though we reviewed the first one together way back then.
Well, and I think the problem with the first issue is it didn't really give me a sense of where the title was going long term.
Yeah, it's really by that second and third one that you start to get a, okay, here's where we're going. This is kind of cool, because you just had that shock and awe of, I am the, you know, Herald Cosmic, or the God of, what did they say, the Herald of Thunder?
Herald of Thunder.
The Herald of Thunder, that's what it was. I'm like, I can't remember. But and that was how it left, but you didn't really see what happened with it.
I guess for me, really, by the end of this arc, at issue 6, now I'm starting to see kind of sort of where the title might be going.
Yeah.
Because I'm not interested in a series of Thor, Herald of Galactus. And that's what the first arc was, and now it's a question of where does the series go from there.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but
very
I think
cool.
That's an issue with how long stories take to tell these days versus if this had been a story set in, you know, like the 80s or 90s or something like the Walt Simonson era, you know, we'd have gone through a good couple of threats by now, 6 issues in.
Yeah, very true. It's very different, you know, reading from the past till today. Not one better than the other. It's changed so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, kind of cool.
Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool.
The November 2020 previews came out on October 28th, and the deadline for preview spotlight number 156 is the morning of Saturday, November 7th, 2020.
2020. Recording clips for the preview spotlight episodes is easy, and we've got an open submission policy for these episodes. Please send in clips to support the comics you love as often as you can. If you'd like to get email reminders for the preview spotlight episodes, you can join the emailing list on the main page of the comicbookpage.com website. And a quick reminder that we've also got the recommendation roundtable episodes going. The point of those episodes is to help people find other ways to spend their time. So send in pics of comic books, either older ones, back issues, trades, whatever, novels, television shows, movies, video games, if there's a board game you think people might really enjoy or something. Let's get that out there. We've got a lot of ways we can spend our time in helping people find things that they might be interested in. It's just a great thing to do. I've gotten a lot of clips from Billy Hogan. I want to thank him for that. It reminded me that I should really go reread Astro City and put a few other things kind of back on my radar, including a couple of novels he recommended. I've added those to my reading list. We'll see when I get to them. But we've got no deadline for these episodes. The way these episodes work is you send in one clip per pick, and that could be a particular book or video game or TV show, or it could be a series of books. Anything that's kind of a unified thing. And when I get enough of those clips, I'll string them together, I'll kick out an episode. So that means if I get tons of clips, like when Billy sent me about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes of some great clips, that was enough for me to get two episodes put together, about an hour for one and about 45 minutes or so for the other. So that's what episodes 2 and 3 are. But if I don't get clips, it may be a while before that next episode comes out. And the reason I'm doing this is there are a lot of things hitting like the streaming services and stuff like that on not really a set cadence like we've got for the preview spotlight. So if you wake up one morning and say, you know what, there's a bunch of stuff I think people might enjoy, spend a few minutes, send in the clips, they get in the queue. And if it's another few months before you do the next one, that's great. But hopefully we have enough people sending in clips on a regular enough basis that we can be putting one of these episodes out every month, every other month, or something like that. So once again, the point here is just to recommend older comic books, novels, television shows, movies, video games, or anything else that doesn't really fit the format of the preview spotlight, but that you really want to kind of share your love of and encourage other people to check out. So once again, there's no deadline on those recommendation roundtable clips. It's an open invitation for everybody at all times. So please send in clips when you've got something you're thinking about and share the love.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.